not have your own Cornish genealogy, and I feel really bad for you. So Gage has made arrangements for you to be naturalized and to be a true Cornishman so that you won't be left out. And so anyone who is attending who is not a born Cornishman can participate in a naturalization. It's going to take place Saturday night after the banquet. And you will not only be part of a wonderful ceremony, but you will get an official certificate so you can show everyone that you are Cornish. And so if you want to become a cousin Jack or Jenny, then you just need to go over to, the information center and sign up on the list so that they will be ready for you. And also tonight is a concert, the Heatherdale concert, and if there's anyone who does not have tickets for it, you can buy them across the street for $20 right now, or they're $25 tonight at the door. Okay, now on to our next speaker. Cornish bard Rosalind Patterson is the co-founder and public relations officer of Cornuach Luanda, the largest Cornish festival in the world. The week-long biannual celebration is a defining cultural event in South Australia's Copper Triangle. She's an honorary life member of the Cornish Association of South Australia and was awarded the Order of Australia Medal in 2001. Rosalind is co-author or co-editor of 6 history books dealing with aspects of Cornish settlement and Australia history. She currently works as a volunteer at the South Australian Genealogy and Heraldry Society Library in suburban Adelaide. And today she's going to tell us about that Cornish Festival.
Good morning, everybody.
Three towns of Cadena, Moota and Wallaroo
flourished with copper mining, smelting and associated support industries. Cornish engine houses and Cornish chimneys are scattered all over the area. In many ways, it was Cornwall transported 12,000 miles away. In 1923, due to the low price of copper and the expense of watering the mines, they closed down. By 1973, the population had dwindled to 7,000. Farming and fishing became the main industries on the Upper York Peninsula. By the late 1960s, I heard two statements. One was from a young Adelaide bride. I don't want to live in one of those awful Cornish miners' cottages. If my husband is shifted to Kadena. And a young boy who said very appreciatingly, my family were only Cornish miners. The local Chamber of Commerce could see that that Australia's little Cornwall was steadily diminishing, and so they sent a deputation to the Premier of South Australia. He was the head of government. His name was Donald Dunstan. He was of Cornish descent, along with at least six other premiers of South Australia in the period 1861 to 1982. The flamboyant and forward-thinking Dunstan suggested that the deputation consider tourism and running a Cornish festival. In 1970, a public meeting was held in Warragul. I attended that first meeting, and as a member of the National Trust of South Australia, I said my piece about heritage, tradition and authenticity. I remember one man, the late Mr. Bill Wern, who said, we can have a festival in 6 months. We'll have marching girls and skydivers. It took us nearly 3 years to properly plan, research and publicise the projected Cornish Festival. A general committee with subcommittees heads representing entertainment, hospitality, research, publicity, associated events, Bosti, procession, Ferganuri, Village Green Fair, Art Prize and cavalcade of cars evolved in the first 3 years of the festival. The old residents of Moonta were very much against a festival that included Kadena and Warragul. They were 10 miles apart and 6 miles apart. They weren't regarded as being Cornish. They felt that they were the only people that should have a Cornish festival. A Moonta cook, renowned for her Cornish food, refused to share any of her recipes with the organising committee. You can see why I could never read this paper back in South Australia. The local newspaper editor, living in Moonta, was quite vitriolic in his paper, which covered the three towns. He criticised the Glowings, who mostly had Cornish connections anyway, of having too much to say. He expressed the opinion that the festival would never get off the ground. As the research officer for the steering committee and a perceived Glowing, I checked out the Cornish surnames in the local telephone book and found that there were nearly as many Cornish surnames in Kadena and Warragul as there were in Moonta. Editor and owner of the paper continued to criticise and kept on implying that his family were pioneers of the area, having come in the early 1870s. I wrote a personal letter to him, pointing out that one didn't have to be born in Moonta to help run a Cornish festival. I also told him that my ancestor, Walter Phillips, was one of the four Cornish miners who had tested the first site of copper discovery on York Peninsula at Warragul Mines, 18 months before the Moonta copper find. So my family had been resident for 15 years previous to his own and had lived on York Peninsula for a total in 1973 of 95 years. He ran, without my permission, that letter in his paper. Because our state newspaper was owned by a Cornish family, the Benightons, and our local papers were also owned by the Cornish, it was necessary to distinctly identify what was truly Cornish in our local and state culture. Most of us took the tea treats, the Sunday school anniversaries and the pasties as normal, and not realising that Queenslanders and many New South Welshmen didn't know what we were talking about. They would have a sign on their milk bars, delicatessen, which said hot pies, whilst in our South Australian delicatessens we had one saying pies and pasties. I embarked on a pressure cooker reading program of books on Cornwall. In Australia, up until 1973, there was only Oswald Pryor's book called Australia's Little Cornwall, which dealt with Cornish. In the State Public Library, I discovered a book on Cornish language. As I read, I thought, what a perfect opportunity to choose an authentic name for a festival. At the time, there wasn't one Cornish language scholar in the whole of Australia. Not having a language background, I chose the name Cnua Glorinda, meaning Cornish happiness. Got it wrong, didn't I? It should have been Glorinda Cnua. But of course, the name was so different and so Cornish that it stuck in people's minds. In 1973, we chose the May long weekend for the festival as a guarantee of good crowds. We wanted to extend the tourist season for the Copper Coast, which normally closed down at Easter. In 2007, the long weekend was moved to March, the last month of our summer season, but we decided to keep the third weekend in May for our festival. We needed cool weather for our pasties, our costuming, and of course, to continue encouraging visitors to York Peninsula in our winter period. The Lorinda is held in the three largest towns on the York Peninsula, and has a good effect on the whole region's tourism visitation. Many of our younger families had lost the art of printing pasties, making gingerbread, scurvy pies and saffron cake. So we held a couple of cooking demonstrations for the local women. We also handed out recipe sheets. The Cornish Association of South Australia, founded in 1890, helped with these events. Later they taught us all the furry dance, the North Cornwall way, which was later criticised by some native-born Cornish people. They have been with us right from the start, advising, funding and promoting the festival. 2 nights before the first festival in 1973, I had a phone call from the Premier's office in Adelaide. Could my husband and I go to Mr Dunstan's motel room in Wallaroo and teach him how to make and print a pasty? He was due to compete the next day in the inaugural VIP pasty making competition. As my husband was a Liberal and the Premier was a very forward-thinking Labour man, Neil objected to going into the Premier's motel bedroom. Finally agreed, respecting the man's premier position in South Australian government. The night passed without any problem, and Don Dunstan later put out a cookbook with his favourite recipes in it, and in it he included his recipe for Cornish pasties. Distant cousins of mine, grandchildren of a Welsh convict transported to Tasmania for theft, and some people say that the Price family still get like that, were the main bakers in the three towns, and so I showed them photos and taught them how to crimp a pasty. By the time of the 1975 festival, we had the crimping on the pasties. Before that, they were just, you know, as people say, with false teeth around the edge. They even paid an older relative of theirs, May Price, who had been born in winter, to get up and drive around to the family bakehouse and print pasties from 4 a.m. And she, at that stage she was around about 60 years old, and she used to do that every morning to teach all the bakers and the helpers a proper job. The first Cnua Glorinda was a raging success. We estimated that 10,000 people filled the Moonta Oval for the first fair Cnua. A similar number went through the 18-room museum at Moonta Mines. We had letters from former residents congratulating us on the decision to hold a Cornish festival, and sentiments such as, our family just loved the East Moonta Methodist Church, and my cousins from Broken Hill will be thrilled to be back in the old town. The festival, in its early days, was like a family reunion for former locals. With the knowledge of Cnua Glorinda percolating through the six states of travelling vast distances to meet up with former schoolmates from Cornwall. On that first festival weekend, the local shopkeepers didn't realise or didn't really believe us as to how many people would be filling up our streets, pubs and churches. There was not sufficient flour to make pasties for the fair community, and the proprietor of the local flour mill had to sweep the floor to get enough flour. the service stations ran out of the normal grade of petrol, and the local pubs laughed all the way to the bank, and still do to this day. The influence of the Kanua Glorina has spread far and wide. New Cornish associations have been formed, others have been lifted from the doldrums, still others have a new name and direction. There are now festivals which have a strong Cornish flavour in them in Australia, possibly because of the influence the Glorina has had on people's perception of their own Cornishness. The festival has had some interesting times. Like many voluntary groups, we have been ripped off, lied to, and promises broken. We've tried hard, to be honest, in our advertising, but we were reported to the Consumer Protection Body. We've had drunken performances by the Adelaide Morris Men, who weren't even Cornish, and we've had been invaded by a large biker gang who even scared the local police force. We have had the help of our seven schools in our York Peninsula, Northern York Peninsula area, the music teacher for this area, and many talented people within the community all have helped us. The May Queen competition encourages a mid-teenage girl group to support our festival, and they do add a charming aspect to many of the official functions. The classic cavalcade of cars and motorcycles needs approximately 30 marshals to get the 600 odd vehicles around the town, the road network of Wallaroo, Moonta, and finally to the Kadena Football Oval. We also have task forces who empty rubbish bins, put up marquees, collect entry fees, move chairs and equipment, and sell souvenirs. They are often service or sporting clubs who get paid for the work that they do. The paid staff who work in Kadena and Wallaroo is equivalent to 1.2 full-time effective. It has been a real challenge to encourage young people to be involved with Kanua Glorina. We normally have about 200 in 7 to 13-year-old girls, girls and boys, dancing in the furry dance. Recently, my daughter Bethany, who had started dancing in the furry dance when she was 7 in 1982, has taken over the teaching of the furry dance and the maypole dance. Another teacher, also a young mother, has run music camps and performances. We look forward to her return. Similarly, we hope to see the return of our former young treasurer, who also has young children. Funding of the festival has always been a problem. In 1973, the South Australian government gave us a seeding fund of $1,000. This has gradually increased, but now comes with strings attached and has to be used for publicity. We also have international sponsors in a variety of companies whose principal is Peter Butterley of Ireland. Initially, interstate and overseas people made comments about our high level of sponsorship, wrongly perceiving that we were very wealthy. In fact, it is quite the opposite, and without the support of the District Council of the Copper Coast and our local volunteers, we would not be running any festival. Research on locating suitable clothing examples for our townspeople was carried out with photos being studied of family groups in the 1890s in our local area. A campaign was set up to ensure that period costume for the festival would add special atmosphere to the area. This has been supported by the local charity clothes shops, saving long skirts, long sleeve blouses, men's waistcoats and lace-up shoes over the preceding year. These are then sold to the locals. We have window displays in local premises and photographic spreads in the local paper. By this time, the editor had joined the supporters and we were allowed lots of free space in his newspaper. His name, by the way, was Cecil Ellis. One year we ordered a large number of polo shirts. Here I've got them on. in black and yellow with our Miners Head logo, which is on this t-shirt, polo shirt. Our volunteers went around to the local shops, and to our surprise, we found they purchased a number of them. Come festival time, there was hardly a period costume to be seen in our main streets. The shop assistants were all wearing the polo shirts, and so we lost that year the old world look that we were seeking. Our festival has seen many improvements to our towns. The event has raised the profile of the Northern York Peninsula and brought tangible benefits to our community. As each year goes by, we see improvements and expansions in the variety of shops and business houses in our towns. We have many more services, including a large dental surgery, 3 law firms, 3 large supermarkets, and some good coffee shops. Our town halls have all been upgraded. Art collections, as a result of the Camille Glorinda Art Prize competition, have developed in Kadena and Moonton. We have an RV park in Kadena now. They said in 1972 that it was impractical. We have substantially upgraded RV parks in Port Hughes, Moonta Bay, Office Beach and North Beach. Our lovely old pubs have some upgraded accommodation. We have large numbers of beach houses which can be used for rental. A large holiday hostel has been redeveloped and is used by groups. Halls with facilities close by are also used by youth groups and bands. They bring their sleeping bags and their mattresses and use the kitchen and toilets. The other standby has been that ever since the festival started, it has been staying with your relatives or bringing a trailer and parking it in their backyard. Upmarket accommodation has been built with our first 5-storey accommodation complex completed recently. We have also 5 motels in the district. People stay in nearby towns and interstate bus tour groups have made a point of staying about 3/4 of an hour from the coast for Camille Glorinda. The area is unique in South Australia with Cornish mining landscapes and a picturesque coastline fronting Spencer's Gulf. The once disparaged quaint mining and smelting cottages are being lovingly restored by the baby boomer generation. The seaside housing developments have been substantial and very extensive housing estates in Kadena, Moonta and Wallaroo have opened up. So the district of the Copper Coast is growing. Now there are 12,700 people living in the area. There are approximately 10,000 houses in the 3 towns. We have 2 new schools and a technical and further education college in Kadena. The towns have 3 hospitals and 7 aged care facilities, including hostels and nursing homes. We live in a fine place. History, heritage and shipping, mining, yes, it's still going on the York Peninsula, shopping and government services and lots of sporting grounds and activities make the 3 towns a good region to set up a business or find work. But it has more. It has state heritage listed areas, winding roads reminiscent of Cornwall, cottages mixed in with industrial archaeological sites, and some special churches and public buildings. The Copper Coast has a special Cornishness which sets it apart from the many towns in South Australia. We are proud of our past and look forward to our future. It's a great place to live and work. When I asked a young high school student just 4 years after the first festival what he thought of his hometown, he said in a proud voice, "My family were Cornish miners."